Call to order this meeting of the Senate Education Committee for the first session of the 27th Alaska Legislature. Good morning, everyone. The date is March 25, 2011, and the time is 8:03 a.m. In attendance today are Co-Chair Senator Meyer, Vice Chair Senator Davis, Senator Stevens, Senator French, and myself, Co-Chair Thomas. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Today we will be hearing SB 6, an act relating to providing a pre-kindergarten program within a school district. On March 9, we heard a presentation by Bill Millett, who spoke to us about the economic impact of early childhood education, and we learned how important it is to start teaching children early in life. As a matter of fact, much of the testimony we've had or heard over the last couple of years has been related directly towards early education and how important that is. More than once, we've all been told when a child hits third grade, how easy it is to predict pretty much how successful they're going to be in the later grades. Some would say you can do that when a child is 3 years old. In any case, we know that the earlier children are involved in education, the better the outcome is. We intend to hear the bill today and on Wednesday, and use this as an opportunity to hear from various organizations around the state that are offering pre-kindergarten programs. Today, we'll hear from the bill's sponsors, and also from the administration on the pilot pre-K programs and the early childhood council that is gearing up. This is Senator Davis and Senator French's bill, so I would first ask if either of you would like to make some introductory comments, and if so, whoever wants to go. Senator Davis?
Thank you very much. Thank you for hearing this bill. I feel that it's an important bill that needs to be addressed, so thank you for bringing it forward. You said some of the things that I would say about this particular bill, but I want to speak pretty much to the bill. This bill is only here so that we can begin the process to make sure that we have pre-K statewide through all our schools. It does not necessarily mean that the districts will have to provide all the services that's going to be provided, because there are some programs that are working in small towns and villages. They might still have to run that way. It has nothing to do with trying to do away with Head Start or Best Beginning or parents as teachers. There's a place for all of those programs. And this particular bill that I have here is to get it within the statute so that the pre-K will be a part of the foundational formula. We don't have that. That's what we need. We need to begin the process. Even though they have this note saying how much it would cost based upon how many of the children they think would come into the program, that money is not even needed in the beginning to get started planning and doing what we're doing. We've had a pilot program going into a third year saying, well, you want to get that data back and be able to compare that. We already know out there that pre-K works. And we are one of the few school districts, states rather, that don't have pre-K in their school districts. And so with that, I'll allow Senator French, if he wants to give some comments before I call my aide up to run through the bill.
I believe Senator French has indicated he does want to. So please, Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I do want to say just a few words, and I really appreciate Senator Davis's opening remarks. I guess I'll just start by saying there's very, very strong public support for pre-kindergarten. I subscribed to the budget report. They tallied up all the people that called in this year to comment on the operating budget, and the number three item mentioned by folks calling in on the operating budget was to add money for early learning and best beginnings. If you go on down a few more notches, you'll find that there was also a substantial number of people who called in to support an increase to Head Start. If you add those two together, they come out ahead of every other single item mentioned by the public in talking about the operating budget. The public is asking us to start to fund pre-kindergarten. The other thing I want to mention, and I think we all know this, but it's just worth saying over and over again, I don't think there's any more powerful way to bend the curve of the outcome of a young child's life than to give them early learning opportunities. We've had a very powerful presentation this year from an expert in the subject. I can't add much to that, but we know that, I think, intuitively. We can't emphasize it enough. I'll just read one quote from this pamphlet put out by the National Scientific Council Center on the Developing Child at Harvard University, the The publication is called The Science of Early Childhood Development. One of the many points they make is that the basic principles of neuroscience and the technology of human skill formation indicate that later remediation for highly vulnerable children will produce less favorable outcomes and cost more than appropriate intervention at a younger age. It's really like the old adage that an ounce of prevention will prevent a pound of cure. I passed out earlier at a joint session between our two education committees this sheet of facts from the Federal Reserve Bank of Minnesota that made many of the points that we heard from that speaker from North Carolina, that kids who attend preschool are more likely to graduate from high school. I mean, I guess I would just stop right there and just say, what are we planning to do about the horrific dropout rates we have in Alaska? And frankly, I haven't seen a concrete way yet to increase our levels of graduation, and yet we know this works. Preschool works because it keeps kids involved, it keeps kids learning, it keeps kids from feeling like they're not understanding what's going on. Kids who go to preschool are more likely to earn a higher degree later in life. Kids who go to preschool are less likely to commit violent crime. Kids who go to preschool are more likely to be self-reliant as adults. It's just a powerful, powerful way that we can improve the lives of young Alaskans. This year we're looking at many, and we've heard from the university presidents. We had the three of them here at a session recently, and they were talking about the amount of money and time and effort they're spending on remedial education for the kids coming out of high school into their university system. I'd like to take that money and spend it on early learning and perhaps eliminate the need to do remedial education for kids at the university level. Let's get them while they're young. So those are my opening remarks. There's a lot to be said. There's a lot to be studied. And I appreciate the committee's attention to this important topic.
Thank you, Senator French. Do any of the other members of the committee have any preliminary or opening comments? Seeing none, I believe your aide, Senator Davis, Tom, is prepared to run it, walk us through the bill. Not run us through, but walk us through the bill. Mr. Obermeyer, if you put yourself on the record. And
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The bill before you that you should have in front of you is the committee substitute for Senate Bill 6, a blank committee substitute. It's 27LS0058/B as in boy. This committee substitute is
a blank. Excuse me, please.
Yes. Point of order, I have /M.
Let's see. It may well be in your packet, but further back. I'm not sure I have.
I'll come here.
Yeah.
I want you to read my statement so it'll go in the record before you do the bill. Okay.
I don't have. I have /M as well. So
everybody's got M.
Take a brief at ease, and we'll get caught. Parker. Senator Meyer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that we take up the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 6, backslash B as in boy. It's my understanding we don't have that in front of us just yet, but we will shortly. And with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd allow the sponsor's aide to go ahead and talk through the changes, and then we should have the bill
just
a copy of it shortly.
Yes. Momentarily, that's as well. And I think he has some other something else he wants to put on the record as well, so we'll continue. Continue, Mr. Obermeyer.
Yes, again, Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The Senate Bill 6 is an act relating to providing a pre-kindergarten program within a school district and providing for an effective date. Pre-K programs are growing in popularity across the country. Developmental research, neuroscience, and program evaluations have found that a child's experiences from birth to age 5 shape the brain's architecture and influence later life outcomes. SB 6 provides for a pre-kindergarten program within Alaska school districts for students 4 and 5 years of age. Parents are not required to enroll their children in a pre-K program. School districts are also not required to initiate pre-K programs, but they must be supported in funding and development if they do. Students who are enrolled in a pre-kindergarten program will be counted in the average daily membership count for foundation formula funding. Early education programs are one of the best investments available to states. Over 40 states in the District of Columbia offer state-funded pre-kindergarten, and at least 17 states have provided funding supplements to Head Start. Early childhood policies vary from state to state, as well as program options, such as private child care, preschools, federally funded Head Start, and state pre-kindergarten programs. State leaders are responding to the realities of today's working families, federal and state policy pressures, and the demands of the No Child Left Behind Act. More women with young children are in the workforce than in previous decades, and many children spend full workday hours in the care of others. For every dollar invested in pre-K, there is an estimated $4 to $9 return to society in higher graduation and employment rates, higher earnings, less crime, less need for special education services, less use of public welfare systems, and better health. Alaska not only has the benefit of building on a long history of successful early education programs for the last decade, but it now has the experience and results of the Alaska Pilot Pre-Kindergarten Project, AP3, funded in the legislature in 2009. Year one of the project, and you're supposed to hear from this today, I understand, found high numbers of children exceeding expected growth. While there is still extremely high need for the majority of children coming to the pilot pre-K project behind typically developing peers, this program shows what can be done with unprecedented levels of cooperation, coordination, and collaboration between Head Start programs and the school districts with help in alignment, transition, common planning, and training. SB 6 expands on the $2 million startup funding in the pilot pre-kindergarten project in an effort to make pre-kindergarten a reality and available to all Alaska children statewide. That's the introductory sponsor statement, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Do you have a copy of the bill at this point?
I believe everybody now has version backslash B, yes. Thank you.
I can go through if you'd like.
Do you have the bill?
I don't have the bill, but I have the.
You can take mine.
Do you have the B version?
You just run copies off. Do you have some extra?
She's got four copies for everybody else.
But I gave you mine back, so you can give it to him.
All right. Thank you. You should have before you now the B version, which is a committee substitute for a blank committee substitute for Senate Bill 6. This CS clarifies the optional nature of the pre-kindergarten program, which wasn't explicit in the previous version, and I was concerned about that because we had districts that called us and said, are we required to do that? And then also, the drafter found an inconsistency in the existing statutes that were passed in 2008. This version amends Alaska Statute 1403060E as an echo, to delete the prohibition on including pre-elementary students in the count under AS 14.17 and provides for part-time inclusion in funding purposes. Decisions pertaining to program curriculum, teacher qualifications, and part-time funding status are all delegated to the department under this version of the bill. So those are the reasons for the changes. And in part, it was due to the way the pre-kindergarten had been looked at in the statutes in the past. And if you'd like, I'd be happy
through the bill itself.
I'd be happy to go through the bill.
Please.
Section 1 amends the description of an elementary school to include a pre-kindergarten program for students age 4 and 5. Section 2 establishes standards for a school district to provide for an optional pre-kindergarten program. Section 3 on page 2 amends the school age to include 4 and 5-year-olds who attend a school district pre-kindergarten program. Section 4 amends the definition of pre-elementary school to include a pre-kindergarten provided by a district.
I think we need to just double check on the section numbers. Thank you.
Okay. Well, maybe go back here and let me look at this again.
Yeah.
I don't have, and I apologize, I'm trying to do this without an updated
sectional
on this thing. I'll just read from the bill if necessary here, and I apologize. And I can also get the drafter online probably if you need the drafter. I'll go back. Where would you like me to start? Through the chair, Senator French?
First beginning, I think, and walk
beginning.
Through it, I think, would
okay.
be good. Just to start with.
Okay. Section 1 provides a pre-kindergarten program description of an elementary school to include a pre-kindergarten program. That hasn't changed. And Section 2 it establishes an elementary school that would consist of an optional pre-kindergarten program. I don't think that has changed either. Section 3, again, is correct. It amends the school age to 4 and 5-year-olds who attend a district in a pre-kindergarten program. Section 4 adds a new section. A child who is 4 or 5 years of age before September 1 following the beginning of the year and who is underage may enter a public pre-kindergarten program. Section 5 indicates, and again, I'm not going back and forth between the two bills at this point. Section 5 indicates that the department would be exercising general supervision over public schools and conditions needed to adopt and recommend plans and evaluate programs and performance under this title and adopt regulations for the implementation of a district pre-kindergarten program. And I think you'll notice that would be under on page 3 under lines 17 and 18. Section 6 As I, Section 6, changes, a minor change on the bottom of page 4, where a pre-elementary school means for children ages 3 through 5 years of age, they just changed the word age around. But they also said, and a pre-kindergarten program for children 4 or 5 years of age that is provided for by a district. And so it amends, presumably, the determination of schools in a district to include pre-kindergarten for state funding purposes. It indicates here, I think, more specifically, that that it's not mandatory that a district have it, but a pre-kindergarten program that is provided by the district. In Section 7, this provides regulations for implementation of a pre-kindergarten program by a district using the model curriculum developed by the department under Alaska Statute 1407.030, subsection 13. And Section 8 indicates another amendment in that one elementary school, which includes those students in grades kindergarten through 6, and as accepted, except as provided in subsection C of this bill, a pre-kindergarten program that is provided by a school district for students 4 and 5 years of age. And subsection C, as it refers to, is on page 6 at the bottom. Which reads that a school district may not include in the average daily membership of a school students who are 4 or 5 years of age if the students are enrolled in a program that receives funding other than funding under this chapter. And then subsection 9 is amended, adding a new subsection. I'm sorry, I was referring to that earlier. So that those are essentially all the sectional changes. And I don't think it's as easy, frankly, and I will get a revised sectional on this. I don't think it's as easy to anticipate the changes that were made by the drafter in order to include this in the program that where the pre-kindergarten children had been in statutes not recognized in the first draft, and that they had to make some changes in order to include this in the average daily membership. And that's essentially, I think, the main reason for the CS.
Okay. Thank you. And just for my clarification, it is optional, not mandatory for the districts, is one general premise. And then the last item that you mentioned in Section 9, funding other than this chapter, I'm assuming that means state and federal money.
Let me read that again.
The last page, last sentence, actually, other than the effective date.
Mr. Chair, it does indicate that students who are enrolled, if they're in a program that receives funding other than funding under this chapter, and so I don't know if it would refer to private schools, to federally chartered schools. I'm not too sure. I think the department could explain that better than I could.
All right. We'll ask what that generally refers to. Other questions at this point in time? Senator Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, are we going to be hearing from the various school superintendents? Are they going to be testifying?
We have tried to get them lined up for not today. No, not today.
Okay.
But we intend to hear from them on this, and we have I don't know who signed up offline, but we do have in the room. The department has representatives here to comment on the bill, and we also are trying to line up the superintendents, as I understand. We look forward to testimony Monday and Wednesday, I believe, as well.
Wednesday,
Friday. Monday we're doing confirmation.
Confirmation. Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, and the reason why I ask that is that I know most schools are pretty well maxed out already.
Yep.
In fact, it's most schools have overcrowding. So I don't know what this would do if now all of a sudden we said the schools were open to the 3 to 5 year olds, but perhaps the superintendents could work different hours or different times for these kids.
Mr. Chair and Senator Meyer, I did speak with Carol Coleman, the superintendent of Anchorage School District, this morning at about 7:45, and she had other meetings. But she did indicate that they're traveling down here with the school board people, I think, this weekend, and they'll be here through Tuesday afternoon. They have their own budget before the assembly next Tuesday night, but you might be able to ask questions of them at that time. I don't know that they've made any calendared scheduling in the offices, but I'm sure they'd be willing to weigh in on the issues, certainly in the largest school district in the state.
Senator Davis.
I just like to add to the fact that, yeah, many of the schools might be maxed out in numbers that they have at their schools, but it would be left up to the various districts to decide what programs they want to implement and how they would arrange for them to be done. And they don't all have to take place within the school facilities. I said that in my opening statement. There are programs that are working in Anchorage even that might be interested in that as long as they meet the requirements that's laid out by the department. Those children could go to those schools and still be able to get the dollars that we have, but if they are not a part of that, they would not receive the foundation money. And so that's what that statement is in there saying. If they were in another program and not getting money from the state, going by the state regulations, they would not receive that money. But there are some school districts that have space for this and want these programs. So, you know, I don't think we have to second guess how many schools can afford it and how many can't, because the situation changes all the time. Numbers go up, they go down. New schools are being built. There'll be more space, so I don't think that should be a concern that we have to be worried about. And besides that, it gives them an option. If you don't have the space for it, we're not forcing them to have them.
Very good.
In the statute.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, and I'm not concerned about that, but I think that would be a concern of the superintendents if all of a sudden we passed a bill like this and then said, okay, you got to find a place for all these kids. And so I just want to make sure we're working in conjunction with them. And because I do know the public schools already offer some pre-K programs. I think it may be for kids with special needs or special ed kids.
Title One.
I'm sorry?
And the Title One schools, a few of them have them.
Okay. Well,
the schools.
I know my daughter did qualify as a special needs child in a non-Title One school. So I know there's some going on, and I guess that's another question I'd like to ask the superintendents, is that the number may not be as big as we think, because I think there's already some pre-K programs going on in our schools. And then also, I know there's some going on in some of the faith-based schools, but I think those, by our Constitution, wouldn't be eligible for any public funds.
No.
And then, let's see, there are other programs. Well, we mentioned those, like Head Start, and you're saying those would still continue. So, okay, no, I think it's a good program. I just want to make sure we figure out how we can coordinate all the existing programs with this new program and have plenty of teacher support and facilities ready and to go when this happens.
Good. Yeah, that's what we're attempting to do, and I'm not sure who we have obligated at this point in time to testify, but if Superintendent Como is going to be in town, I don't know if we've contacted her, in fact, if she's going to be in Juneau, to see if she'd be available while she's here, because that would be helpful. It's much better to do that in person than it certainly is to do by telephone. But we're working on that list, and if there are no other questions of Tom, Senator Stevenson.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much. This is a fascinating topic to talk about, and it seems to me as we progress in trying to find what are the problems of why so many students are not graduating from college and failing and dropping out of high school, this seems to be maybe something we can grasp onto to try to save kids. But it seems to me also that the curriculum is extremely important, and I'd like to hear that from the experts, from the professionals. you know, certainly we can't teach algebra to four and five-year-olds, but I read here that somebody was doing an Athabascan immersion program. Does that really take you forward? Does we need to take our students forward? So I'm really interested in what that curriculum is. What are we covering? And the assumption is, under all of this, is that, in fact, pre-kindergarten prepares kids all step by step along to success in life. And I can buy into that, but I'd like to hear more about it. You know, there's so many parents are... Let me be careful about saying this, but there are parents who look on this as a babysitting program to take care of the kids when they want to go to work. And God bless them, I understand they have to do that. But I'm not interested in a babysitting program. I'm interested in really finding a way to make sure that these kids are prepared to succeed in life. So where do we get that information, and who are we going to hear that from? And the other issue, of course, I'm concerned about is how it's going to be paid for by the districts.
We'll get a lot of comments on that, I'm sure, but I think today we have with us Cynthia Kern from the administration to talk about the pre-K pilot program, and some of those questions are appropriate for her to see what, in fact, they believe the curriculum should be or is at this point in time. So if we don't have any other questions of Mr. Obermeyer, we'll call Cynthia forward and have her bring with her whoever she might feel will be helpful in answering some of the questions and thoughts that have been put forth at this point in time. And if you would please come forward, put yourselves on the record, and give us kind of a summary of the information that we have before us, as well as respond to the questions that have been at least asked at this point in time.
Oh, sure. Good morning, Chair Thomas, members of the committee. Cynthia Curran, Director for Teaching and Learning Support at the Department of Education and Early Development. I would like to respond first to two questions, and I hope I heard them correctly. The first question had to do with preschools that already exist in our public school system. And under special education law, IDEA, school districts are required to have programs for special needs children. Under 619B of the IDEA. The second question had to do with an Athabascan culture course. It should be noted that particular district that used it as an add-on to the regular curriculum that they were already using, and they were using a curriculum called Open Court, which is in use throughout the state for reading and literacy in pre-kindergarten to sixth grade. I believe that you all have a copy, seven pages. Okay. I'm looking and seeing one thing, and I have another thing. I have a distillation of that big, long document. Yes, I have seven pages that really bring it into focus on the statewide.
Great. Thanks. Thank you.
As you know, the legislature gave us, the Department of Education and Early Development, $2 million for the preschool pilot project. We have seen much success with this project. Our students came into the project substantially lower in skill ability compared to their peers nationally. We have seen great growth, but we also know we have a lot more to do in order to close all of the gaps. Districts and programs used the funding in a variety of ways. Some of the districts added new classrooms with certified teachers. One of the caveats in applying for this money was that the district, needed to partner with the entities that were already providing services within the district area. We need a transition so that everyone is working toward the common goal. And I know Senator Stevens has expressed concern about high school graduation. We're all very concerned about that. If we're all working together and we have seamless transitions. In other words, all students come to school ready to learn. We believe that more students will graduate from high school. Some districts use the money to create new classrooms with certified teachers. Some enhanced existing programs. I have notes all over here, and I'm trying to find my notes. Basically, new or enhanced existing programs. The funding in a couple of the districts allowed them to hire early childhood experts in order to create plans for the early childhood programs that weren't in existence at that point in time. If you look at page 2 of the document that we just passed out, you can see where the programs were and the districts that they were in. We also granted money to an outside entity to perform the evaluations, the pre and post assessments on the early childhood environmental rating scale. At the back of this document, you'll see the results of that. We assess not only child outcomes with this, we assessed program outcomes. The child outcomes were measured by the Peabody Picture Vocabulary Test, both pre and post. Peabody Picture Vocabulary Test provides information on vocabulary and receptive language development. We also use the Developmental Indicators for Assessment of Learning, that's the Dial 3, to give information on three areas of school readiness: motor development, concept development, and language development. And as I said previously, the ECRS, the Early Childhood Environmental Rating Scale, provided us information on what the environment was in which the children were going to their pre-kindergarten programs. If you look on page 3, you will see that 72% of our assessed children, and this is in the very first chart, showed more months of growth than the number of months between the assessments. And then if you look at the second chart, the age equivalent growth, 31% of our children ended the project at or above a typically developing peer on a national level. If you look on page 4,
I don't understand that 72%. I'm trying to figure that out. What are you talking about?
When you look at the chart,
the first chart or the second?
I'm sorry, the first chart.
Thank you.
The orange color would say that children showed less growth than was expected.
I see. Thank you.
And then
so
as
everyone
you move
else
up,
then is more growth, you're saying?
3% the same growth.
Do you want to math? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Through the Paul Sugar Department of Education and Early Development, through the chair to Senator Stevens, 25% performed, showed lower growth than expected, less months of growth than the time there. 3% showed the expected amount of growth, and so the remaining 72% showed greater growth than the months that they were there in the school between the two assessments. Some of them, as you further see the breakdown, it shows you how many were up to 6 months greater growth, up to a year's greater growth, all the way up through to 2 years greater growth. And so if it were, say, 6 months between the two assessments, above 6 month growth would actually be a full year's growth within that 6 months of time.
And if I could ask, in that case, were the programs developed by the department or in conjunction with, or did the individual districts develop the programs?
Chair Thomas, the individual districts were required to develop programs that aligned with the early learning guidelines, and they were allowed to pick their curriculums. So in the fact that they were partnering with entities that were already providing services. And in some cases, Bering Strait, for example, uses the Success for All curriculum. So when they went to partner, they decided they would use the Curiosity Corner, which is part of Success for All. So each entity got to decide how they would use a curriculum, what curriculum to use, but it needed to align to the early learning guidelines.
And I see this is the state aggregate, this chart number one, pie chart number one. Did we do an individual and try to assess the expected growth for comparison between the programs for potentially innovating and seeing which is the most effective?
Chair Thomas, we do have that information. We can provide it to the committee.
Okay, if you would, that'd be.
We will do that.
Along with the curriculums, I would say, of each of the individual eight or nine, whatever the number is.
Chair Thomas, we would be happy to do that for you.
And those that did adopt programs, how was that done? Was that just made a general solicitation to the districts, and those that were interested responded, and you lined them up, and how did you choose?
Chair Thomas, there was a process. It was a request for applications. I confuse my P's and A's with, so it was a request for applications and RFA, and the districts were required to meet certain criteria. In the beginning, there were around 24 districts that showed interest. We ended up with 12 districts applying. There was a process whereby early childhood experts, people from the department, people from the university, all read through the applications, scored them against a rubric, and determined which applications met the criteria. So that's the process for becoming one of the districts that would have the pilot pre-K.
That information, I think, would be helpful to people. You know, sometimes we're a little overly detail-oriented, but, you know, how the process took place and the curriculums and the number we talked about, the growth percentages in the individual programs, I think that would be helpful for us. Senator Stevens?
Mr. Chairman, I think you've really gotten at the key of this whole thing, which is when we're doing a pilot project, we want to find out what works and what doesn't work. So I don't want to get ahead of you, but are we going to find out that something didn't work particularly well, and we're going to stop doing that? And are there some things that really worked well? That's a question that I hope we'll get to eventually. And I don't want to see all this data. I want to have a summary.
An evaluation of the data, yeah.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that I'm not sure how many pages that other document is that's beside you, but that has much of the information that you are asking for. However, we can provide probably an even more succinct terms, the information that you're asking. But yes, the department is looking at the things that did work in this case. And as we move forward, should the pre-K be funded, we would be looking at helping districts make different choices if what they were working with didn't work the first time, move into a different arena and try something else. And as the process would, as more districts would maybe apply, then there would be different criteria, knowing what we know now that we didn't know before.
Thank you. Thank you. Please continue. Senator French.
I'll wait, but I've
okay.
got a couple questions.
All right. Yeah, maybe if we get through a little further. Maybe we're jumping ahead of you here, and you're going to answer all of our questions before we... Please proceed.
Okay. Looking at the top of page 4, 17% of our children have moved from the bottom two quartiles to the top two quartiles in overall percentages of growth. Our students, as I've said before, come in with significant needs. They score significantly below their peers nationally. We know we're closing the gaps. We know there's more to do. So helping the districts and the grantees know what works is a very important part of this. As you look at the dial 3, you can see this is the total scores percentages. When compared nationally, the total score showed once again that the vast majority of our children starting the project entered in the bottom half on the assessments. By the end of the year, we finished with 52% showing scoring in the top half.
Mr. Chair.
Wrong thing.
Senator French.
Thank you. I think it is worth worth it to spend a few minutes on this page. I'm on page four, and there's two sets of graphs. There's graphs on top and graphs on the bottom. Both, at least from my understanding, compare how our kids looked in the fall when they entered the program on the left side of the page, and how they looked on the in the spring at the conclusion of the program on the right. And as I look at it, I mean, these are troubling graphs to really sit and think about for a moment, because if you start in the upper left-hand corner, the graph up here, you see there are kids, at least the kids in this program, and there were only 330, but they were around the state in Anchorage and other rural communities. 72% are in the fourth quartile. I mean, that's just heartbreaking when you stop and think about it. That's three-quarters of our kids coming into a program that are at the, you know, bottom of the scale as far as their abilities and in the qualities that this test is measuring. And yet when you look, you know, on the right-hand side, you see that the program moved the needle significantly. Whereas you only had 4% in the top quartile in the fall, that number's doubled in the spring. And suddenly you've got a lot more kids that are at the top of the scale. But more importantly, you've moved an enormous amount of kids out of that bottom quartile. And I know we'll probe at this and slice it and dice it and press on it, but I think it was these sorts of numbers, when you really stop and think about them for a minute, that encouraged me about the results of the pilot. Thank you.
And this chart, I don't know if we can assume it or not, but on the previous page it says the following chart illustrates the student's growth in relation to an age equivalent typically developing child on a national level. Is that in fact the same caveat for that the graphs that Senator French or the pie charts that Senator French refers to on page 4?
Chair Thomas, yes.
Okay, thank you.
And maybe I can just ask, what's being measured there? Again, we're on page 4. There's two sets of graphs, top and bottom. On the top, we're measuring PPVT, which is real close to our oil tax.
There's a connection.
Volume tax.
Right. And at the bottom, we're measuring dial 3, which is a soap. And so maybe you can just describe what we're measuring at the top and what we're measuring at the bottom.
Through the chair, Senator French, the Peabody Picture Vocabulary Test measures a child's receptive and vocabulary development.
And what does receptive mean? I mean, what is that about?
Chair, through the chair, Senator French, what a child understands versus what a child produces. So I could give a direction and have say, would you please give me the paper? So does the child understand, A, what a piece of paper is, what it means to give someone something? So what the child understands, the receptive language, the thinking process, yes.
Okay. And vocabulary. So vocabulary and receptive on the top and on the bottom, the dial?
Areas of school readiness. So overall motor development, bouncing a ball, walking, skipping, being able to hold a pencil or a crayon, concept development, and language development.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Very good. Please proceed.
One of the high spots in all of the data was that Alaska's children on motor development, this was the area that they scored highest in the beginning, and they continued to score well at the end. So the pre- and the post-assessment, it was a very strong area for Alaska's children. Concept and language development scores, we started out with 60% of the children beginning the project in the bottom quartile. Once again, a significant amount of movement. By the end of the year, only 38% of them remained there. And then on the language scores,
you're on page six.
You can see that 87% of the children enter the program in the bottom two quartiles, and 35% on this particular assessment are finishing the program in the top two quartiles. So once again, significant movement in what children are able to do. As you look on page seven at the environmental rating scale, the ECHRS, this measures what the program, the environment is for the children as well as for the adults. So you could see up at the top part of that chart, it has information about space and furnishings, language reasoning, activities, interactions, program structure, parents and staff. All of these things relate to the quality of a program, so that the interactions between staff to staff, staff to students, staff to parents, teaching folks how to engage children in conversation, how to, when you're bouncing a ball and you're a little kid, for some of us it's just natural to say, oh, you're bouncing the ball. How many times can you bounce it? Some people don't have the innate ability to know that that's something that you would want to do to help develop their language or their motor skills. So helping them to understand that, knowing that having blocks and maybe sand or rice for students to learn how to measure or pour is very important. These are the kinds of things that this particular measurement looked at. So that you could see down in the bottom how much improvement that we made in the state. So the project showed almost one full point of growth in the first year. And that's a highly significant with regard to this measurement. I should note it's a 7-point scale. Thank you, Mr. Lifeline. So one of the... We looked at child outcomes, as I said before. We looked at program outcomes, but we also looked at outcomes for the state. Through this program, we've been able to help districts and those people who provide early childhood programs within our state develop their capacity to work together so that we have a concerted effort in the area of early childhood. We've also, with the use of the ECHRS, were able to broaden its base of use. It's been used for a long time in child care centers in Alaska, but it's been voluntary, and it's been mostly in urban areas. Through this project, we were able to broaden its use and know that, yes, it can be used in a variety of areas. The information that we've gathered is going to help us move early childhood education forward in our state, and we are very excited about the prospects. Now, are there any questions before we move to the...
So, I understand. How long of a day is this in preschool? How many hours are contact with the children?
You want to do that?
Paul Sugar, Department of Education and Early Development, through the chair, Senator Stevens. We provided in the series of standards that we set in the RFA to allow flexibility for communities to make decisions around that, but we were looking at no less than 14 hours per week and no more than 5 hours a day. And we have most of our programs are serving around a three-hour day, but the example that you brought up about the Athabascan language and culture in, I believe that's Allakaket, they are using a five-hour day with 4 hours of their standard preschool program and then an hour on the language and culture.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Certainly. We've just got time for one more question. And one of the constant themes that we're going to discuss as we think about pre-kindergarten is cost. I don't think anybody disputes the benefits, although I think we need to spend a lot of time understanding what curriculums are offered and how each district will shape its own process. But cost, I think, is going to be where you meet resistance. And I was just doing some back-of-the-envelope numbers here. We had a $2 million pilot project. We had 320 kids in the project. That comes out to something around $6,200 per student. Are there economies of scale to be had? Do you think that's the right number? Is it going to go up? Is it going to go down? Have you thought at all about where the financial pitfalls or benefits are?
Paul Sugar again through the chair, Senator French. The cost, as is the cost in our school district, varies from place to place. I will admit, when we first put the proposal out, we were hoping that perhaps some of our urban areas would put a very large project together so we could see more about economies of scale. But unfortunately, actually the largest number of classrooms that we received proposals on came from the most remote sites, where they're spread across a variety of communities across a large geographic area, and we lose that economy of scale. But I think that it correlates very closely to what the cost of school really comes down to, in terms of it varies by place. I would expect that costs would not differ greatly if we look primarily at what the costs were in the most remote areas, the hub areas, and the urban areas.
And through the chair, if I could just ask, did these pilots hire new teachers to conduct them, or were they conducted by teachers that were already under school district employment?
Through the chair, Senator French, it's a mix. In particular, some of the models hired brand new folks. Others incorporated their existing staff to use that. In particular, the models where a district provided a certified teacher to go and work, say, in a Head Start Partners space, it was new hires.
And last question on this while we're here, and I know we're running out of time, but are these costs similar to what Head Start costs per student?
I would say that they are similar, probably slightly less in each of the different areas. Because of the partnership and collaboration approaches, we've been able to leverage a larger number of groups and dollars from each group or in kind from each group.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gilbert.
Senator Davis.
I'd like to sort of continue on the same concept as Senator French. We have the breakdown on what the money was spent and how it went to the various school districts. But could you make a chart up with these same schools based on the fact they were a part of the foundation formula, what would be have been paid for these programs?
Through the chair, Senator Davis, we will be happy to do that for you.
I would like to have that, and I'm sure everyone else would like that.
Certainly.
That would be quite helpful. The other question I had, I don't understand what is THREAD? And maybe you just explain the bottom part of that chart. You said you spent $85,000 towards the assessments.
Mm-hmm.
Would you?
Through the chair, Senator Davis. THREAD is our resource. A child care resource and referral network in the state. They were contracted.
Are you talking about the organization THREAD?
The organization THREAD, yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
So we contracted with THREAD to do these assessments. So that's what that's referring to.
All right. All right. I understand that now.
Other question? Senator Myers.
Just briefly, I know we're out of time. THREAD is the old Child Care Connection, right?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, yes.
Okay, good. Well, question I'll have next time is, what is the difference between THREAD and Best Beginnings?
They will be here on Wednesday.
Okay, and are they providing similar services? Because I think they're both kind of coordinating agencies. But we'll wait till next week then.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that would probably be best.
Okay, very good.
Okay, if there are no other questions, that will conclude business for today. On Monday, we have a joint meeting with the House to conduct confirmation hearings for the appointees to the Board of Education and Early Development, the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and the Board of Regents. On Wednesday of next week, as already said, we will continue our pre-care hearing with testimony from different organizations around the state who are active in early childhood development programs. And then we'll continue the schedule thereafter. We're not exactly sure what takes place, but we may have another day's worth of testimony or so as the hour goes by rather quickly, and we have a lot of people to talk to, and we're really interested in the pilot program and the results of that. So that's important to it. So if there is nothing else, we will adjourn at this point in time shortly after 9 o'clock. And thank you all for being here. And for those that were online, we certainly look forward to hearing from you. Most of the people indicated they were here just for questions. So anyhow, we'll deal with that next Wednesday. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.